I'm Monse Alvarado. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, concern for the faithful. After increased aggression in the West Bank, Christian leaders in the Holy Land have three demands for the Israeli government. A message of closeness. After a deadly attack on a Catholic church in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Pope Leo responds. A pivotal week on Capitol Hill. Why things are moving so slowly despite a looming government shutdown. And a force for good. The Holy Father calls on digital missionaries to use social media to promote peace. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of Saints Martha, Mary, and Lazarus. Our top story tonight, a surprise visitor stops by the Jubilee of Youth in Rome.
Jesus tells us, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world.
Pope Leo XIV was greeted by cheers and applause by hundreds of thousands in St. Peter's Square. This was at the opening Mass for the Jubilee of Youth. The week-long event has attracted hundreds of thousands of young people from across the globe. Among the popular features at the Jubilee of Youth is a soon-to-be saint from the 20th century with a love of mountain climbing and the Lord. EWTN foreign correspondent Colin Flynn tells us more about one group's efforts to honor Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati.
I am standing here in beautiful Torino in the north of Italy. Actually, I'm right in front of this bank. But this beautiful, ornate building was once the birthplace and the home of Pier Giorgio Frassati. And that is why I'm here, because across the week I'm joining a group of around 20 young men from across the United States who are walking in the footsteps of Frassati, and will be leading them all the way to Rome, learning about the saint, learning about his life, learning about all the things that have gone on to inspire so many people around the world, and ultimately have been leading Frassati to sainthood. Well, there's a lot of work that goes into organizing a pilgrimage like this, and there's so much behind it. And to find out more, just an hour ago in the middle of Turin, I sat down with the priest who is from South Carolina but based in New York, and he's organizing all of this. His name is Father Vincent Bernard.
Well, I remember how big Frassati was for me when I was in college, and he has remained, I think, a big figure in my life, an important saint for me. And to be able to now share that as a priest with other young men, I think is important. I think that they're looking for how to be holy. They're looking for ways to grow in virtue. I think Frassati has an answer to give them for that. And people need examples, especially these guys. Like, they need examples for what that looks like, and that's possible. And Pier Giorgio represents all of that. And of course, we're in the year of his canonization. So it's a great year to come and actually walk in his footsteps because of that.
So what's the plan for the next couple of days as we make our way down through Italy towards Rome?
Yes, so of course we started here in Turin, the birth and death place of Pier Giorgio Frassati. We'll head up to the mountains in Europa, the shrine that he loved. We'll climb one of his mountains, Monte Macrone. We'll go around to Pallone, where the family villa is, and spend some time there. Head down to Rome via Assisi. We'll say hi to Carlo Acutis real quick. And then we'll be in Rome to see his body. We'll have Mass with his body at Santa Maria sopra Minerva and spend some time for the Jubilee in Rome together.
We'll check back in with Colum throughout the week in anticipation of the canonization of Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati and Blessed Carlo Acutis in September. Now be sure to follow the Jubilee of Youth here on EWTN. We'll bring you special reports and more live coverage with your hosts, Catherine Hadro and Father Aquinas Gilbo, tomorrow starting at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. Christian leaders in the Holy Land are now issuing demands to the Israeli government after increased aggression in the West Bank. This week, Israeli settlers set cars on fire and left threatening messages in the town of Taibe, the only mostly Christian village in the region. The graffiti said, "You will regret it," in Hebrew. This comes after earlier arson attacks against the local church and cemetery at the start of July. In response, the patriarchs and heads of the churches in Jerusalem, including Latin Patriarch Cardinal Pier Battista Pizzaballa, released this statement saying, We're gravely troubled by the prevailing climate of impunity, which undermines the rule of law and jeopardizes peaceful coexistence in the land of the resurrection. They also demand that the Israeli government act with moral clarity and commitment by holding accountable those responsible for the crimes without delay, ensuring effective and consistent protection for the people of Tebe and all vulnerable communities, and upholding its obligations under international law and guarantee equality before the law. Yet another major Western nation says it will recognize the state of Palestine. The United Kingdom made the announcement today, but there is a caveat. Prime Minister Keir Starmer says if the Israeli government reaches a ceasefire deal in Gaza and commits to a long-term sustainable peace, then the UK will not recognize Palestinian statehood. However, it is prepared to do so at the United Nations General Assembly in September if the war continues. The Vatican Communications Office is also urging a two-state solution. In an opinion piece penned over the weekend, the editorial director of the Dicastery of Communications discussed the church's stance. He noted how in 2015, the Vatican signed its first treaty with the state of Palestine. That was under Pope Francis. But Pope Benedict XVI also said the Palestinian people had a right to an independent and sovereign homeland. And Pope St. John Paul II also established relations with both Israel and the Palestinian Liberation Organization, known as the PLO. Before leaving Scotland to return to Washington, President Donald Trump said the U.S. would set up food centers in Gaza, later adding they will go up very soon and Israel will run them to make sure the distribution is proper. He also said that kids are starving and they do need food. This as the death toll in Gaza, reported by the Hamas-run health ministry, just surpassed 60,000 people since the deadly attack by Hamas that started the war on October 7th. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen, what do you have for us?
Monse, good evening to you. Before leaving his golf course in Scotland, President Donald Trump, who's been able to end global conflicts, including between India and Pakistan, made it very clear to reporters that playing golf right now is definitely not a top priority.
We'll play it very quickly, and then I go back to D.C., and we put out fires all over the world. We did one yesterday. As you know, we stopped a war, but we stopped about five wars. So that's much more important than playing golf. As much as I like it, it's much more important.
One fire President Donald Trump still trying to put out, Gaza, where food crisis experts now warn that the territory's population is facing the worst-case scenario of famine and widespread death will occur without immediate action. Flying home on Air Force One, President Trump addressed Gaza.
You know, we sent money, and I want to make sure the money is spent wisely and is spent judiciously and that food is distributed in a proper manner.
The Israeli ambassador to the U.S. says the blame is not on Israel, but instead on Hamas, adding there's no policy of starvation.
There is definitely a crisis in Gaza. The question is, who's responsible for it? We are not preventing aid from entering Gaza. We never have. We never will. We don't want to see people hungry.
Meanwhile, President Trump says the Russia deadline to get a deal done to stop the fighting in Ukraine is now officially 10 days from today, down from the original 50 days.
And then, you know, we're going to put on tariffs and stuff, and I don't know if it's going to affect Russia, because he wants to obviously probably keep the war going.
The Kremlin earlier responding, saying that Moscow has taken President Trump's statement into account and continues to adhere to peace efforts. This as across Ukraine over the last several hours, dozens killed or injured by Russian glide bombs and ballistic missiles hitting civilian areas, including a Ukrainian prison and a medical facility. Among those killed, a 23-year-old pregnant woman.
Also tonight, a top Vladimir Putin lieutenant warning President Donald Trump against, quote, playing the ultimatum game with Russia. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you, Owen. Officials are trying to unravel the details of a deadly shooting at a Manhattan office building, which left several dead, including a police officer. Investigators believe Shane Tamura was entering the building to try and get up to the NFL offices, but took the wrong elevator. The gunman claimed in a note that he was suffering from a brain disease linked to contact sports known as CTE. Investigators found that Tamura drove across the country the past few days before making his way into New York City prior to the shooting.
The motive appeared to be connected to the shooter's belief that he was suffering from CTE and he was an ex-NFL player. Those items just don't pan out. He never played for the NFL. And so we're still unraveling this terrible shooting that took place in the city.
Pope Leo XIV sends a message of deep sorrow after Islamist militants kill more than 30 people at a Catholic parish in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. In a telegram to the head of the Bishops' Conference of DR Congo, the Holy Father said in part he joins in mourning with the victims' families and the Christian community. Pope Leo also says, quote, "This tragedy calls us ever more urgently to work for the integral human development of the suffering population in this region." An armed group linked to the Islamic State launched the attack on Saturday. They stormed the church during a vigil service and shot and killed nearly 36 worshipers. For more, we turn to Father Don Bosco Anyala, editor-in-chief of the Africa-based agency of EWTN News, ACI Africa. Father Don Bosco, thank you for joining us. A lot to discuss, but first, what more do we know about the aftermath from Saturday's attack? Have any suspects been identified or arrests been made?
Thanks, Monse, for having me. First of all, this comes as a very unfortunate happening because ordinarily there has been respect for churchgoers, and these were members of the charismatic movement who were basically having a night vigil, and these attackers came, and yes, as you've said, yes, dozens were killed. We do not know if there have been any arrests. What we know is that there have been widespread condemnation from the Catholic bishops, from other church leaders. And indeed, it's a shocking incident that everybody finds very, very unfortunate.
Now, as we mentioned, Pope Leo did send a message expressing his deep sorrow over the attack and his closeness to the Christian community of the Democratic Republic of Congo. How has this message been received? How important is it that Pope Leo chose to speak out?
That Pope Leo the 14th chooses to address this matter amid many other issues around the globe shows his solidarity with the people of God on the continent of Africa and the suffering in the Democratic Republic of Congo. People quote him, and other media houses, yes, voice his solidarity with the people. And this goes a long way in showing that he's a pope who is aware of the challenges that people face and is able to show and express his solidarity. Very important message.
Significant for getting more people to pay attention to what's going on there. Well, let's turn to something a little bit more cheerful. As we know, the Jubilee for Youth began today in Rome, and you and I were talking about what it was like to see Pope Leo there. EWTN is going to continue covering these live events in the coming days. I understand that several groups from Africa will be in Rome for the Jubilee if they're not already there. What can you tell us about that?
It is very impressive that there are hundreds of Africans in Rome already. We have over 400 coming from Tanzania. We have close to 200 coming from the region of Southern Africa that brings together the countries of Botswana, Eswatini, and Southern Africa. We have people from West Africa, Nigeria, Burkina Faso. We have others from Central African Republic, the Democratic Republic of Congo, the Cameroon, and others. But having said that, it's also unfortunate that many Africans, one, were denied visas, and others just didn't take the initiative to go and look for them because they knew that they would be denied. An example is here in Kenya, where many young people just did not turn up because there has been some negativity that people go to Europe and don't come back to their respective countries. Mm. And so that has been a bit of a negative thing. But it's good that hundreds are there.
It's good that the continent is so well represented. Father Don Bosco Anyala, Editor-in-Chief of EWTN News' Africa Agency, ACI Africa. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Monse.
We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, a pivotal week on Capitol Hill. As the clock ticks toward a government shutdown, lawmakers fall into partisan battles. We're at the Capitol. And as one Jubilee begins, another ends. We'll take you to the Jubilee for Digital Missionaries. Welcome back. Rescue and relief work continues in and around the Chinese capital of Beijing after the area was hit with nearly a year's worth of rain in just a few days. At least 38 people are confirmed dead following catastrophic flooding and landslides. Entire villages are left without power, roads are washed out, and more than 80,000 people have been relocated. Hardest hit is Beijing's Miyun District, recording 21 inches of rain, just shy of the city's annual total. China's leader Xi Jinping is calling for an all-out search and rescue for those missing in the floods. Meanwhile, in Portugal, more than 2,000 firefighters are battling multiple wildfires as the country swelters through a dangerous heat wave. With temperatures near 104 degrees Fahrenheit, fires in the northern and central regions are threatening villages and protected natural areas. Authorities have put most of the country on red alert after weeks of hot weather. Consumer confidence improved slightly this month as the Trump administration secures trade deals with other nations. Consumer confidence climbed to 97.2, showing people's attitudes about the economy have stabilized after sharply deteriorating in the spring. The previous lows were driven mostly by the Trump administration's unveiling of reciprocal tariffs. The U.S. Senate faces a pivotal week, trying to get through a batch of nominations and start on appropriations bills before lawmakers head home for the August recess. Right now, Democrats are dragging out votes on nominations, and some Republicans are even blocking the spending bills. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has more. Eric?
Hey, good evening, Monse. Yes, Majority Leader John Thune is staring down a confirmation backlog of more than 130 nominees, and now President Trump is pressing hard to get these people confirmed. These nominees are both judgeships and federal agency positions, such as the nomination of Brian Birch, ambassador to the Holy See. Democrats could help move them along, but so far they haven't allowed a single Trump nominee to be confirmed quickly. And that could keep the Senate in session into the weekend and potentially beyond.
They can continue to drag out the process on even the most uncontroversial nominees, and we can spend a lot more hours with each other in the Senate chamber. Or they can rein in their reflexive anti-Trump sentiment and allow some of his rank-and-file nominees to proceed.
The majority leader says he is prepared to keep senators in session for as long as it takes. Among those waiting confirmation, Brian Birch to be the U.S. ambassador to the Holy See, a position which has been vacant since January. Democrats are demanding more transparency into the potential foreign influence on several nominees.
We can't reach agreements when Trump simply overrides them later on a strictly partisan basis. There's no trust. There's no way we can rely on Republicans' word if they're going to simply be puppets for Donald Trump.
Republicans are also working against the clock, trying to pass some of the 12 appropriation bills to fund the government past September 30th. Fiscal hawk Senator John Kennedy says he's voting against a bill which would increase funds for Congress.
I'm voting against the ledge bill. That portion of our budget is up like 32% over the past few years, and when we're cutting everybody else, we shouldn't be giving ourselves extra money.
The minority leader fired back, saying Republicans should be following a bipartisan appropriations process.
That's how it's always been done successfully, and we believe that should happen. However, The Republicans are making it extremely difficult to do that.
As for funding the government, senators believe Congress may be headed for yet another continuing resolution to fund the government and possibly even a government shutdown. Most Republicans want to get home to sell the One Big Beautiful Bill to voters and counter any Democratic attacks. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly. Monse.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, a special visitor. Pope Leo surprises digital missionaries and Catholic influencers. The message he had for all in attendance. Plus, a closer look at the EWTN Summer Academy in Rome. Was the last day of the Jubilee for digital missionaries and Catholic influencers. And at their closing mass, they got quite a surprise. Pope Leo made a surprise visit at the end of mass. The liturgy was presided over by Cardinal Luis Antonio Tagle from the Philippines. The two-day Jubilee celebrated and encouraged Catholic influencers to keep evangelizing. The Holy Father addressed all in attendance and reminded them of their essential role of spreading messages of peace and Christian humanism.
Today we find ourselves in a new culture, deeply characterized and formed by technology. It is up to us, it's up to each one of you, to ensure that this culture remains human. Nothing that comes from man and his creativity should be used to undermine the dignity of others. Our mission, your mission, is to nurture a culture of Christian humanism and to do so together.
Many of you saw how Pope Leo greeted the EWTN Summer Academy in Rome during his most recent Sunday Angelus. EWTN Vatican journalist Valentina Di Donato met with some of the participants and gives us a closer look at the Academy, which aims to form digital missionaries for the 21st century.
The Jubilee of Digital Missionaries has gathered thousands of young people from around the world. Some of them are students from the EWTN Summer Academy, which Pope Leo XIV greeted during his Sunday Angelus.
I greet the EWTN Summer Academy.
For the fourth year in a row, the EWTN Summer Academy in Rome brought together 40 journalists from around the globe in the heart of the church to collaborate on stories and work in teams to produce, shoot, and edit videos. The Academy is not only a place for participants to master their journalistic skills, but also to take a deeper dive into their faith.
We do everything for the church and ultimately for the evangelization to bring people closer to God. So when you step outside of yourself and you say, it's not about me, it's about God, you can do almost anything. And even by lowering those expectations through this value of service, then you can even do better work than you could possibly imagine.
Although they are from over 20 different countries and have various interests and experience in the creation of journalistic content, they are united by the same mission.
I was very amazed that we're all here for the same reason, to work for God and do what we can in this world to spread the truth. So that just, for me, it's very humbling to know that we're all here connected together, fighting for what is right.
The goal of the Summer Academy is that after these 10 days of training, networking, and prayer, participants will be well-equipped to be digital missionaries in the 21st century. Charbel and Giovanni have been creating content on Instagram focused on Christianity in the Eastern region, giving historical, current, and local news.
I think our generation, the Gen Z, we're coming to Christ in big numbers, and that's very beautiful to see. And people miss tradition, they miss a sense of belonging, a sense of not scrolling all day.
Yeah, and I think that people, when they see the faith in the East, they get excited and motivated. If they have that strong faith in the East, I want to have it here too. And we have the same from the East. So it's like connecting the entire world, you know, and our faith.
During the closing mass for the Jubilee of Digital Missionaries, Pope Leo XIV encouraged the church and the faithful to use social media to shed hope and truth.
It is not simply a matter of generating content, but of creating an encounter of hearts. This will entail seeking out those who suffer, those who need to know the Lord, so that they may heal their wounds, get back on their feet, and find meaning in their lives.
You know, we're 40 people in that group, and every person is from a country, from somewhere in the world. And it was the first time in my life I saw how global our church is. And I saw that no matter where you are on earth, if you have the good Christian values, we're the same, you know. So that really changed my whole perspective. This is how we changed the world. 40 people or 12 disciples changed the world. Well, think about that.
In Rome, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
Finally tonight, as we mentioned earlier, today is the Feast of Saints Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, a relatively new addition to the church calendar. The three were siblings in the town of Bethany outside Jerusalem during the time of Christ, and Pope Francis says they welcomed Jesus into their home, listened closely to him, and believed he is the resurrection and the life. The name Lazarus means God has helped, and Saints Martha, Mary, and Lazarus are the patron saints of siblings. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless you.